Ladies and gentlemen, from the desk of low, the DOC, and everybody else that's coming after me, prepare yourself for the real deal, OC.
Hey, I ain't got much time. The cops is on my ass. Now, you know, some people call me Gage, but listen, Lowe been working on this interview for a long time trying to get this man on the desk of Lowe, and it's finally here. This episode is legendary, so y'all gotta pay attention. Listen. Now this next guest, he done sold over 1 million records worldwide on his own album. But as a writer, y'all don't even know, man. As a writer,
freeze! Put your hands on your head!
Hey man, fuck the police! Yeah, he helped write Fuck the Police too, with countless other hits, man. This man right here is a legend. You understand me? He dropped his first album in the 80s and I'm still waiting on another album. You heard? You know what I'm saying? So I'm excited for this interview. So without further ado, from Philly to Texas, Texas to Canada, Canada worldwide, Compton, it's the DOC. Yo, I'm out this motherfucker. Yo, I'm gonna holler at you.
Thank you.
No worries. So welcome back from the Desk of Low. Now, have you seen the intro right there? The intro is by former Aftermath artist, went by Gage. Man, he gave Doc his flowers right there. But man, I'm going to give my own intro right here. So man, this gentleman right here, man, we've been trying to get this gentleman on the show for 3 years. But you know what? They say timing is everything. It's a G-O-D thing, as my man would say right here. So with this episode being so monumental, I just want to let you all know his accomplishments, because hip-hop being 50th this year, you want to celebrate him as an artist. Man, he's been a part of three major movements, and it's well-documented, that forever changed my life. The Death Row, The Ruthless, Aftermath impacted me in such a way I can't even subscribe right now. But not only that, he is one of the most influential gentlemen in hip-hop and gangster rap himself. Man, I got the one and only, DOC. How you doing, sir?
Man, I'm so blessed and grateful, and thank you for having me on your program.
Oh, man, you know, we're more than honored to talk to the legend himself right here. So, Mr. Curry right here, I'm just curious right now. In the sixth grade, did you always want to be a comedian, or is that just something I read on the internet?
No, in the sixth grade, you couldn't. I knew I was going to be a comedian because I was funny.
I bet you were. I bet you were. That's why sometimes I always wondered. I'm like, what if the DOC was a comedian? What if he went into the army instead of being a hip hop artist? Did you ever think about how life?
No, God. To all of our servicemen and women for what they do in all the branches of service, but I didn't want to be one of them.
But they say it's a G.O.D. thing because, you know, they say there are certain places in your life, you know, that you place yourself in, you know, it only makes sense. Because I understand that the very first time that you wrote a song for somebody else was somebody named The Rockets.
Yeah. One of the guys, they were a dance group, and they wanted an intro for their group, and I wrote the guy the intro, but he couldn't perform it, so I performed it for him, and everybody thought I was really good, and so I just kept doing it.
And then, you know, it turned into your artist that we know now known as the DOC, because, you know, as I do my research on you, when you were in high school, I understand hip-hop found you in like a POD thing.
Oh, yeah. Found, well, pretty much like it found everybody else. You know, came on the radio, and it was something that I really enjoyed. And, you know, that dance was really big in Dallas at that time. What I was saying was, and excuse me, for giving you this interview while I'm going between places, because it's just meetings all day today that I didn't know about. And I really wanted to make sure I got with you today, because you've been super patient, and You know, I really respect the way that you carried yourself. I'm trying to make this happen. So, like I said, when the music came out, it was just mesmerizing to the young guy and me. And then when the guy asked me to do it, and I performed it in front of people, then I was pretty much locked in after that.
Did you always know that you were going to make like an impact that forever would change music?
I didn't even think of it like that, but I just wanted to be great. You know, I just wanted to be great. That's it. And I wanted people to tell me, Doc, you're great. And so I didn't think about making an impact. I didn't think about making lots of money. I just wanted to be sort of congratulated for my skill set, because I worked pretty hard on it.
Now, you being a very influential man within hip-hop now, I noticed that you're a very humble human being. That's very rare these days now, too. I was wondering now, too. You know, no one can do it better. That only took 3 weeks to go gold. But I was curious now, too. How come you didn't swear on that out?
Yeah, well, the school that I came from, the school of hip-hop that I came from, They didn't do a lot of cursing in their music. It was the NWA guys. When I connected with those guys, they were doing boatloads of cursing in their music. And that wasn't who I was. So I just, you know, stuck to my guns and made it about my skill set. And, kept it authentic, so to speak. So authentic to who I was as a person, as a human being. So that's why I didn't curse. It wasn't a big deal for me. Yeah. I thought it was more of a good deal when you didn't curse and still made it good.
Because that impresses me, because like when I listen to your album to this day now too, I noticed that there's no profanity in it, but the movement that you were a part of out of, yeah, there's profanity in it now too. But did that take some adjustment, like actually being able to, like, you know, swear within the rhyme that you had to write for other people?
No. It's all the same for me. You know, actually, swearing makes it easier. Because it's, you know, there are only so many curse words. And so, you know, the ones that everybody like and everybody know. So, you know, it's easier to work within that space. So I had to, rather than having to create a whole another way of saying something in a way that can be effective.
Now, I understand, like, you know, I was randomly watching the show the other day, Winning Time. And, you know, out of nowhere, I was like, no way, is that DLC that appeared on there? So I was like, so, yo, I noticed, like, you're getting the acting bug, because I seen you in a movie of Bruce Willis called Gasoline Valley, too.
Yeah, bro, I'm, you know, in the past 3 years, I began to get the bug again to create.
I know.
And I'm just putting it out there, and people seem to like it. So I really enjoyed it, and I plan on doing a lot more of it, you know, God willing.
Now, I like how you said a lot of people seem to like it now, too, because I remember you said that you don't really like your second album now, too, but I remember the very first DM I sent you, I was like, you know what, Mr. Kerr, I respect your very first album, but your second album, because I found your first and second album when there was no internet. So as opposed to somebody finding that second album with no internet, it blew my mind when you said, I don't like my second album. Like, you know, Mr. Curry does not like his second album. So did that opinion change over time, or you still don't like your second album?
No, it changed.
Okay, good.
Because what I was dealing with was still being sort of affected by the fact that I couldn't perform the way I really wanted to. And so I didn't recognize the joy in being able to perform at all, you know. And it really wasn't until I made the record with the co-defendants.
Okay.
And people tripped out over it. That I really started to see, wow, I could do it with this voice too. You know?
That was the recent record of the punk rock band, the one you just said, right?
Yeah, the co-defendants.
Yeah, because I remember you said that in the interview. And I went and checked it out. Hey, they became a From Dusk Till Dawn fan because, you know, I like when artists like yourself take chances on, like, this is different. Let me see what I can do with it now, too. So being in the age of 2023, you know, we have this, a lot of people watch the movie Terminator, and I always say AI is the most evil thing out there. But when I take a look at your story now, too, I can't help but wonder and ask you, what does the DOC think of AI?
I think AI is progress, and you can't stop progress. I think when the internet first showed up, people thought it was the end of the world. You know, and that's how generally people look at it. But there were billionaires made from the internet. So just like that, this AI shit, there's going to be billionaires made from this stuff. And rather than being afraid of it or running from it, I think the best bet is to go ahead on and think of all the good things that you're going to be able to get from it. There are people with throat cancer who are going to lose what voice they have. Think of what AI could do for them. You know, there are people in the world with situations where AI could really help them communicate with other people. And so I tend to think of it in those ways. And if I could help that transition, I would be open to it. Because I want to be the DOC, but I'm not, you know, I've already been the greatest of all time. I don't need to do it again. So I'm good on that. But if I can help, if I could be a bridge or a conduit that's going to help somebody else that may have struggled the way I struggled with this voice shit for a long time, then I'd be willing to do that.
And see, I notice about your character now, too. Throughout your entire life, you were always helping others now, too. You were helping Dre, you were helping Snoop, Suge, and all that. But one thing I always admired about you now, too, you never gave up pushing your own goal now, too. So I was curious, Mr. Curry, when you're writing for other people now, too, is it hard sometimes to be like, I kind of don't want to give this one away, but at the same time, you have that mindset, you know, it's for the greater good.
No, when I write, it's the stuff. I tell folks this all the time. The song is the only thing that matters. At the end of the day, it's the song that's going to live forever, not you. So just make the song great. It doesn't have to be for me. Just make the song great. When I don't, if I write a great song, I don't give a damn who gets it as long as it's done well. Because that song is going to live forever. And just because you don't hear me, I'm still there. Like people call me underrated. I think a better term would be overlooked. Because they give me credit all the time. They just don't know they're doing it, right? When they talk about this song is the best, or this album is the best, or this act is the best. I put a lot of work into those things. So that means you're really giving me all my credit. You just don't know it's me doing it.
Oh, we know it's you, sir, because we're very well versed on your history. Because, like, you know, I like how you say that now, too. Like, songs will live forever now, too. Because sometimes, like, do you just hear some of the old records that you hear? It's like, you know that's going to live forever. But, like, do you hear it sometimes? It's like, damn, I can't believe I wrote that. Like, because, like, I understood when you wrote Nothing But a G, then Snoop told you. No, you told Snoop. It's the first and the last line of the song.
That's important. That the most important lines in a record to me are the first one and the last. Because you have to catch them. You got about 15 seconds before you lose any listener. And the ending, because you want them to hear that again. hold that again. So if you hit them with that opening, you hold them for that 15 seconds, they make it all the way through the song and give them that ending at the end that they love to hear. They're going to want to hear that whole thing again. That, at least that's my way of looking at it, grabbing it, grabbing them and keeping them locked into what you're trying to do.
That's very true, because, like, you know, that's what I always tell people now, too. Sometimes it's just that first line that sets it off. It's like, whoa. But, you know, knowing now, too, that we came into the age of video games now, too. I couldn't believe when I saw this now, too, when the good doc, you know, joined Grand Theft Auto. But you're also in that, too, because you did the hook on Gospel for that song. So, but I don't want to talk about the song. I was curious, DLC, you ever play Grand Theft Auto 5?
Well, say that again.
Have you ever played the game Grand Theft Auto 5?
Grand Theft Auto 5? No, I stopped playing Grand Theft Auto a while ago. I don't play too many video games now. I got an 8-year-old son and a 6-year-old son. So when I do play video games, it's some obscure kid game.
Because even with your music now too, the very first time I ever heard of you, because this is what I love about sometimes about hip hop video games, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. They played it was funky enough, and I was about maybe I don't know 11 years old. But the first time I heard that, it blew my mind. I'm like, who is this?
Wow.
So,
that's dope. I appreciate that, bro.
Hey, anytime. That's when I became a lifelong fan. But this is the point I wanted to make for the listeners out there. A video game soundtrack for the generation of the early 2000s, if you found an artist on there, it can really shape your musical history.
Oh, yeah.
So have you been open to, you know, putting more of your music in more video games out there, or like even soundtracks, because a certain movie could have the great soundtrack for that song?
Look, I'm open for anything, but I haven't had control of the art. They've had control of the art, but I'm getting control. I'm regaining control of the art as of next year. And so it may be all over the place, you know. It's just business. I'd like to do video games myself. I'd like to create albums based around it. I mean, I'm just in a creative space right now. So ain't no telling what I'm going to be doing over the next few years.
See, listen, I won't ask you much more questions. We'll let you go because I know you're a busy man. But I understand now, too, that, you know, the very first time when you're listening to yourself now, too, like, do you get memories of back then? Like, do you just listen to, like, your first album and think about back then? Or you try not to live in the past?
Yeah, I don't listen to the old stuff very much at all. I got, you know, Dre kind of, I get that from Dre, you know, for some reason. He never did it, and so I never did it, and now I just don't do it, you know. It is about the future. It's about the next song, not the last. You know, I plan on going to L.A. for a week next month to help Snoop and Dre finish Snoop's Missionary album. He's trying to put it out this year. And so we all haven't worked together seriously. Well, we're all in a creative space in a long time. And we're all in a space where we want to do something great. So it should be a cool, you know, it should be a cool week. We should come up with two or three really great records since we're all in this kind of space. And I'm looking forward to it.
Does it feel like a family reunion sometimes?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Every time.
Now, but see, it shows the growth in friendship now, too, because, you know, it's very hard to keep the same friends over time now, too. It's very hard to keep the same friends over time now, too. Especially when I can only imagine where money, women, Records. I can't imagine that, but it shows the strength of a human being what's inside you guys. Like, we don't let that can control us.
No. We love each other. Those are my brothers. And I want them to win. And they want me to win. So we work for each other's win. And that's just what that is. But we just we're lucky if everybody's in the right head space. That's the tricky part. But right now, in this moment, I think we're all in that space. Well, we're ready to do some new shit, and so it should be a good thing.
Oh man, and plus, I like to say, a lot of people don't put two and two together. Doggy Style was Snoop's first record. Now, as the older you grow, everyone starts finding their own way of sex. But Missionary now seems like the grown up version of Death Row.
That's exactly what it sounds like, too, bro. That you are exactly on point. It sounds like what Snoop's next record would have been like on Death Row. That's what it sounds like.
And see, like they say, everything happens for a reason now too, and timing is everything now too. So you're taking your time on this dog. Is your documentary complete?
Yeah. I've got a I want to reshoot an alternate ending, but yeah, we ready to go. And my goal is to be in theaters around Thanksgiving.
Because you said something very powerful, because I watched damn near every interview you ever done for the past 3 years. I won't lie, Mr. Curry, I watched more pretty much. I scoured the internet. But you said that you can see a 50-year-old white guy in Boston who never listened to hip hop. When he sees that documentary, he can see himself in it now, too. That's a very powerful statement now, too. Because a lot of us, we get glimpses of in your life with interviews like this. But I always wanted like the documentary by yourself now too. So was it very therapeutic sometimes now too to actually talk about this? Because it's all about you. You were always about somebody else. But when you get in, your friends to come in, was that therapeutic and making you able to move on from the past and onto the
Yeah,
future?
absolutely. To do that documentary, it allowed me to get free of the pain of not having my voice because I could see my worth in my journey. And now I'm ready for the second half. And I know that the voice, the one I was pining for, ain't got shit to do with it. But isn't it interesting that this AI has given me that opportunity, and now that I don't even want it as much. You know what I mean? Like, I've been fighting for most of, I don't know, 30 years trying to figure out how I can sound like me and make a record. And when I finally let it go, the opportunity showed up.
Very inspiring, but because like I may have got this wrong now too, but I understand. Did you really quit drinking on your birthday?
I quit doing what?
Like drink? Did you quit drinking alcohol on your birthday? Why?
Yeah. It was my grandmother's birthday.
Oh, it was your
It was
grandmother.
my grandmother's birthday. And Sir Jinx said something to me. And it struck me. And I just decided that day I'm not, not that I was in a space where I'm messing up, or I'm drinking and driving, or I'm gonna get in trouble. But I just felt like when he said that something was telling me it's time to show the universe, if nothing else, that you're ready for the next level in this life. And so that's what I gave up. I gave that back to the universe so that it could understand I'm ready for the next level in this game.
Now, you said you're always ready for the next level and you're in a creative space now too. For a man who has a lot of stories that you probably could not fit in that documentary, I'm pretty sure. Like, it would probably be like 8-hour documentary if you put everything in it, or even like 2 days. But I was curious, have you ever thought about like creating a platform where you tell like stories about, let's say, albums you worked on that would never hear, like the like we would never hear? Like, have you ever thought about that? Because for our generation who grew up on the Shady Aftermath, I'll be honest, Mr. Curry, my generation, we missed out on the Death Row era because we were like 5, 4 years old. We can't listen to that. But when we grew into the Aftermath era, we really fell in love with that era because it was a continuation of Dre from Death Row, but with his own touch. But there was many artists like John Connor, my man Gage. Yo, what up, Gage? Yo, Gage, thank you for that intro, my guy. Like Slim the Mobster. Like, have you ever thought about, like, even doing a YouTube series of you, like, telling yourself, like, were you always around for a new Aftermath signee?
I was around for a lot of it, just because I've always been kind of close to Dre. And I have thought about building a whole lot of avenues where I can. One of the things that I get from interacting with people on Twitter and Instagram
I noticed.
is the joy that you can give a person that don't know you, but really admires you and thinks a lot of you, and it does a lot for them, that you can show them that you give a damn about them. You know what I mean? And so I am interested in building a platform where I can say, for instance, everybody wants me to listen to something and give them my feedback. I could build something where if I can donate that time to you, and you could donate something to this school in Dallas for these kids, and I will sit and listen to your song and give you my honest opinion about where it is, what I think could be done, and blah 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 blah. And in that way, build a platform where I can communicate back and forth with people in a way that's positive and progressive and that serves them and concerns somebody else. So yeah, I've been thinking about that and a lot of different things, bro. Like I said, I'm in a really creative space. I know that people want to be heard, so I want to become open a vessel for them to be heard, at least by me, if nobody else. But if I create a platform that lots of people are listening to, and I play their music to my platform, then that's a win-win for everybody.
So does it take a lot? Because like I understand, because we have to remember, you're from an era where, I'm pretty sure you were a lot more mean in the 90s. I'm pretty sure you're like, yo, man, because I understand you were hard on a lot of people in Death Row. But over time, the more humble giant you are now too. So you don't have to teach kids how to do songwriting now too. But what inspires you to do that? What inspires you to want to make others be heard?
Because I'm doing it because I love the art. You know what I mean? I love the art. I love to be able to do it. And so, can't do it for me, but I don't want to not do it. You know what I mean? So I do it for the people that are close to me, the people that I give a fuck about, and their win becomes my win, right? Snoop Dogg is an icon. I think a lot of I get a lot of good feelings because of that. Dre's an icon. I get a lot of good feelings because of that, because I know I had something to do with it. If you listen to the music, you can hear me. You can't see me, but my effect is there, and I hear it, and other folks hear it. And by the time you see the documentary, you'll see it, because you'll hear it coming from them.
Now, well, I got two more questions for you, sir, and I'll let you go because I understand you're a busy man. Now, for you to finish a documentary now too, I was curious now too. Do we expect you to collaborate on like more music? Because I remember you said on Steve-O's podcast you could do a song with him now too. But like, are you open to recording new music as I did at DOC.
Oh yeah. Well, once I made the song,
Wait, why are you
laughing? You asked me to come. Are you going home or what? I'll get your stuff ready.
Don't worry, I'll sorry, cut that part out. I'll cut that part out, no worries.
Oh, no, bro, don't cut that part out. Let me tell you something. Being a father is one of the great joys of life.
Oh, okay.
What you just got was a real look at a real, authentic human being telling his sons that he loves them and he came to pick them up from grandma's house. You should let everybody see that. But what was the question?
About you being inspired to have other people be heard.
No, you asked me. Oh, yeah, but you got it right.
No, wait. No, I recorded new music under the DLC. That's what they're
right. So, ever since I did the song with the co-defendants, I went on the road with them, performed with this voice in front of 20,000 people that loved it. And everybody was in awe, and they were like, and people saw it on the internet, and they was like, man, you look great, and blah, blah. So I know I can do it now. You know what I mean? I don't fear. What are they going to think? Are they going to lie? Am I going to die? Now I know I can do it. At least in that punk rock space, I know it works, which is damn near what Delta's character was, a punk rock record almost. But I know it works. I don't have any fear about doing it. So if Steve-O is ready, I'm ready. And I'm going to make another record. I know I am. I mean, I just don't know when.
Okay. But you can't rush everything. That's what we said. Timing is everything now, too. Now, one more question, Mr. Curry, now, too. In the documentary you have coming up, too, do you finally give us the meaning of what DOC means? You don't have to say it here, but it does. Do you finally explain the meaning of the DOC in the documentary? Because there was a million came up with that over time.
There's probably a million reasons that acronym is there, but you have to see that for yourself in the movie. You're gonna get a real kick out of that part. That I can guarantee you that part you're gonna really enjoy.
Oh, trust me, every week I look for DOC documentary release date, and it's just like, I'm waiting, Doc. We waiting over here.
I'm gonna come in for 1 second, then we go.
What up, young Kim? Hey, so Mr. DOC, we're gonna let you enjoy fatherhood because that's the best part of being a parent now too. But before we let you go, Mr. DOC, we want to give you your flowers and let you know, like, you know, your impact will always live on through generations and generations. You probably know that, but you forever changed music, forever impact my childhood, my teenage years, my high school years. I can't thank you enough, sir.
Thank you, man. God bless you.
God bless.